Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Extra Serving, a podcast by The Last Bite Network, a production of Nation's Restaurant News and Restaurant Hospitality. This week on The Last Bite Network, Takeaway with Sam Okus aired a mini episode with Damola Adamalakan, CEO of PF Chang's, and another mini episode with Joe Guth, president of Focus Brands. Both were filmed live at Create and have some interesting insights with the CEOs. We will be back next week with regular episodes of that podcast, featuring Luke Holden, founder and CEO of Luke's Lobster. In the Kitchen with Brett Thorne featured restaurateur Sam Fox this week, where Brett and Sam spoke about Sam's entire history and his new position of employee after so many years as being entrepreneur and boss. And that's Sam Fox, not Sam Okus, though I have both of them with me on the podcast this week. I am Holly Petrie, your host, and I'm joined by my two colleagues.
My name is Sam Okus, editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News, and definitely not Sam Fox, noted restaurateur.
And I'm Brett Thorne, senior food and beverage editor. All of these things.
Well, we're back from Create. We're all together again digitally. It's nice to see your shining faces again. I love when the three of us are on the pod. We always have a good time. So there was...
You think. I don't know if Brett and I necessarily agree with that. What do you think, Brett? I love it.
Brett will tell us when he doesn't like it, so we would know.
True. I'll let you know.
So the biggest news this week, I'd say the biggest news, is that Domino's saw negative same-store sales for the first time in a decade. That's a pretty long time. Though it is negative same-store sales after the incredible high of last year. So we had to expect a downturn. Though I think their sales are still pretty impressive considering it was negative year over year. So what do you guys think about this decade long sales streak?
Yeah, I mean, if it weren't for, the incredible numbers last year, then it could be continuing. I mean, it's just, there was nowhere to go but down after last year. 2020 was a big year for pizza, and it was a big year for Domino's because as the number one pizza chain that owns its own delivery, it was an incredibly useful solution for people when they were quarantining. I think when you compare 2021 to 2019, they're up 15%. So, that's maybe a better measuring stick for how Domino's is doing right now. When you say something like negative, when their sales are down year over year, the context is really important here because Domino's had such an incredible 2020. So, when you want to step back a little bit and look at the decade that they have had, there's perhaps no company that's been as impressive. I mean, you're looking at a company that was really down and out in the late 2000s, came out and said, our pizza sucks. And is there any better assessment of how well that marketing campaign performed than a decade of positive sales growth? It worked. And their focus on digital obviously was really helpful too, because they were ready for the pandemic and then some, and so they were able to cruise on through it. Not worried about Domino's, to break that streak, to look for what that streak was, is nothing short of phenomenal.
Yeah, what Sam said. I mean, I don't think anybody's worried about Domino's. And as Sam said, they really were not in good shape. During the last economic collapse of 2008, they had PR nightmares with a viral video of an employee desecrating a pizza and just all sorts of ridiculous nonsense. And since then, they're at least as much a tech company as they are a restaurant company. And that's kind of what the public needs now. And they anticipated this years ago, and as third-party delivery before the pandemic was kicking in and becoming a concern for everybody, Domino's was like, no, we're good. We already know how to deliver. It's fine. And they continue with menu innovation. In this week's menu tracker, they have a bunch of new, like, dipping melted cheesy sauces that you can buy with some breadsticks, and that's $8. So they're working on their incremental sales, and they sound pretty good.
Well, another thing in this week's menu tracker that made some news was McDonald's and their new plant burger that they're testing in a few markets. What do you guys think that if are they kind of behind the times on their plant burger?
Well, it depends on who your market is. And for years, people have been asking McDonald's, why don't you have a vegetarian entree? And the response has always been, we'll have one as soon as our customers ask for it. And their customers clearly weren't asking for it. And, you know, there's a lot of hype about plant-based protein, as people like to call it, or meat analogs, as I think I prefer to call it. But the sales numbers aren't huge. They're growing, but still most people like to eat actual hamburgers and french fries and milkshakes and stuff. So, you know, I think McDonald's doesn't need to, it's McDonald's. They don't need to follow what anybody else is doing. They can do their own thing. And I guess it was inevitable that they would test the McPlant, and we'll see if their customers are really into it. And it's interesting that they are testing it in some California communities, as you'd expect, but also elsewhere where it's not as obvious that people would want a plant-based burger. But on the other hand, restaurants like BurgerFi, for example, that have rolled out meatless burgers have been surprised that the response is kind of similar all over the country, that everywhere there is a certain percentage of people who want to eat meatless meat for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think the best comparison here, excuse me, is Burger King's Impossible Whopper. So Burger King, of course, being the first real national chain to come out and offer a meat analog, as you say, Brett, although that word always makes me think of technology. So for some reason, it just throws me off. But yeah
so on purpose.
It makes me think of like the 80s.
Yeah, that, me too. Weird. That's a bizarre thing. So, Burger King was successful with its Impossible Whopper, but how do you measure success? Because, you know, for them, from a sales perspective, it was still a very minuscule chunk of their sales. We're not talking about a Popeye's chicken sandwich that swoops in and makes up a quarter or a third of your sales. We're talking about very, very small percentage of sales, but it did grab a lot of headlines and did great for their marketing. And so plant-based right now, I think, it's one of those things you got to do, because there is a chunk of consumers out there who is going to demand it, and it's a responsible thing to do. But we're not talking about totally shuffling the menu and totally, grabbing a bunch of sales. It really is something that's going to remain a very niche part of the menu for all of these companies, particularly the companies that have built a brand on beef, because that's not what their customers are coming for. So I think it's good that McDonald's is doing this now, because they sort of have to. But I really, are we talking about the Impossible Whopper now? No. Now, granted, there have been a lot of other things we've been talking about for 18 months, but still, I think the point is that it's going to be one of those things that lives on the menu for that subset of customers who really wants it, and will not, for the big burger chains, dominate the conversation, and certainly not the sales.
Well, speaking of a chain that's dominated everything, even throughout the pandemic, is Popeyes. And they just released a new campaign with Megan Thee Stallion. You know, I love pop culture news. This is a story aimed right at me.
Megan Thee Stallion, Holly. Not Megan Thee Stallion.
Megan Thee Stallion. Blend it in and it sounds more natural. You don't want to pronounce it.
There are two E's.
There are two E's.
You have to make sure you get this. Yep.
There are two E's.
You can tell I don't really care that much. But, I'm not the core target. I think one of the things that we've seen a lot in recent restaurant marketing is that they are becoming really more niche oriented in who they're targeting. So, they'll find a TikTok celebrity to promote a Dunkin' beverage, for example. And there's a boba tea chain, I think Kung Fu Tea, that has had LTOs that were based on anime characters, which for some people is super important, but it's not quite mainstream yet. Megan Thee Stallion is mainstream, but I still don't care. And that's fine, because I'll still get some beans and rice and a chicken sandwich.
Right. But she's not doing just a meal with them. She's franchising, which is what I think is the interesting thing here. I mean, she's doing a line of hot sauces. There is a tie in there, but she's franchising. I mean, that's almost in line with like what Shaq's been doing for all these years. And like, is she going to become the next Shaq in terms of restaurant leadership?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the Shaq comparison is a good one because athletes for a long time have gotten into franchising because it's athletes there, you know, there've been all these reports about how athletes go bankrupt so quickly because they make all this money so quickly, but then they live this lavish lifestyle and goes away. And so athletes franchising has become a great investment for a lot of athletes. And I think there's, you know, perhaps that could be true across other celebrities and people who come into wealth in terms of franchising is a solid investment. And what better brand right now than Popeyes? I mean, there's not many other brands outside of, you know, Domino's, Wingstop, some of the ones we talked about that are as sure a thing as Popeyes right now. But I guess the other thing I'd say to that too is, you know, we live in a TikTok era. I personally don't do TikTok because I feel like I'm way too old for it, but I'm guessing, you know, we talk about like some of the celebrity meals from McDonald's, and Brett, to your point about some of the niche things that companies are doing with celebrities and products, you know, social media is driving this. TikTok is driving this. Personalities like Megan Thee Stallion are presumably really hot on TikTok, and what they can do for brand exposure is incredible. I mean, I'm guessing here. I'm guessing she has millions of TikTok followers. I don't know, but point is that what her brand image can do in connecting to Popeyes is going to be huge for their customers and potential customers.
I think her location is going to get all these visits, and is going to become really popular on TikTok. Not to like tag her, but I think it's going to become popular just to be like, I went into her store. Even though she'll never be there, I think it'll become popular specifically for that reason, to be like versus I don't think anybody goes into any of Shaq's franchise locations and thinks that, because I don't think they know necessarily which ones he franchises. So I think this is one of the first very public deals where she's going to be very public about, this is my location.
Yeah. I mean, look, a lot of professional athletes are not visible outwardly in their investment, their franchise investments. It is purely a financial transaction. And that's changed a little bit over time. I mean, you have some levels of, you think of like a Peyton Manning when he was with Papa John's, you know, became also a face of that company. Shaq has done that now with Papa John's as well.
John Elway has his own steakhouse chain.
Yeah. I mean, and so some of these, you know, some of these personalities do take it the step further where they do some marketing for it. But by and large, I know a lot of the athletes who've gotten into franchising, you wouldn't even know it. You wouldn't know their stores. And so this is obviously obviously a marketing play as much as it is the, presumably she sees it as an investment. I won't speak for her, but could it be a cool thing for her if she showed up in her store? Like, I mean, that becomes marketing in and of itself. Like, you make do events and maybe she'll own 100 Popeyes eventually. Who knows? But that could be a possibility to leverage the marketing exposure of, you know, her brand name and pairing that with her stores.
As long as nothing, you know, bad happens, which can happen to Jane sometimes.
Fingers crossed.
Or, you know, she gets mobbed by paparazzi or whomever. I guess everyone's a paparazzo now, aren't they? Because we all have our phones.
Very much so. Now, Sam, we have something pretty cool going on here at NRN that we'd like to ask some listeners about. Can you describe that?
I sure can. Thanks, Holly, for asking. So right now, in our November issue, we want to answer your technology questions. What I mean by that is technology is complex. There are so many products and platforms out there available to the restaurant operator. We all know that in the last 18 months, the digital environment for restaurants has exploded. This is a good thing, but it also can be overwhelming. And so we're going to troubleshoot your tech problems and questions. And so we're asking our audience to send in those questions, and we're going to hunt down some experts to answer those questions. So we're asking you to send your questions to me via email, sam.okus@informa.com. And whatever that question is, it can be big, small, you know, maybe you think it's a stupid question. There are no stupid questions. Send them in and we will find some experts to answer them for you and feature them in our November issue.
We're talking any kind of technology, right? Like, it could be your POS system or inventory software or whatever.
That's very right.
Or Instagram.
Yep.
I'll be here to answer the Instagram questions.
Oh, no. So, I'm sorry for all those who ask the Instagram questions.
A friend of mine's Gen Z daughter taught me that you can edit your Instagram posts. I had no idea. That was a couple years ago. So I've been editing my posts a lot.
Very good. Very good. Now, Sam, you did one of our interviews for this week. We are lucky enough to have two interviews that are both recorded live at Create. Can you tell us a little bit about your interview for this week?
I sure can. So I had the pleasure of sitting down with Dr. James Pogue in Denver at Create. James owns JP Enterprises. He consults with businesses on diversity, inclusion, and bias is what he calls it. DIBS is his acronym. And so he's just an incredible speaker and thought leader on diversity issues right now. He moderated a panel on widening the talent pipeline at Create, which was all about bringing more diverse people into all levels of your organization and making sure we are bringing up diverse voices into levels of leadership and into the corporate ranks as well. So ahead of that interview, after that interview, we sat down and talked about what they discussed on that panel and James's work in diversity and sort of the state of diversity in restaurants currently generally.
That's great.
And of course, it's not just a feel-good thing. If you have a more diverse workforce, especially when there's so much trouble finding workers, you actually have access to a lot more people to work for your company. Welcome everybody.
That's right.
And James Pogue is so interesting. We were speaking with him after the podcast was shut down, and he was just so interesting to be around. It's a really great conversation. Definitely stay tuned.
James, we just got off the stage, had an incredible conversation about widening the talent pipeline. It was, we had these great panelists speaking on diversity, inclusion, and bias. This is what you travel the country speaking with organizations about how to improve their efforts and initiatives to improve diversity in the workplace and in their leadership and culture. And these three panelists we spoke to are actively doing that in their companies as well. James, tell me, just summarize real quick, What was that conversation all about? Why do we have to have that conversation in the first place?
Sure. Well, before I start, I really want to thank Marissa and Shalina and Tanika for participating on the panel. I mean, they didn't have to. They're very busy people, and they're working really hard in this diversity space in a significant way. So kudos to them for taking the time out to share some of their best thoughts and strategies on what's happening. But the reality is that it is critical to have these conversations. If organizations want to be relevant moving forward, then they have to have a significant process around diversity, inclusion, bias, equity, moving towards belonging. And if they don't have it and they're not working hard on it now, when tomorrow comes, which inevitably it will, they will be so far behind the power curve, it'll be almost impossible to pick back up.
So, James, you've been giving us some great contributions at NRN through our SpeakerBox platform. And your most recent contribution, you were talking about a good starting point for having this conversation. I know a lot of people listening have, they know that they're supposed to do this, right? They know, they understand that this is an issue. And we've been having these really hard conversations for a year and a half now, since George Floyd, but even before that, obviously. Yeah. For those who are listening, what should they know about the steps they need to be taking right now in order to, you know, learn from leaders, but also implement this in their own organizations?
Sure. So I said this on the panel, but I think it bears repeating. So I just want to underscore it here. First, you have to define the language that you're going to be using in your organization so that everybody's speaking from the same sheet of music. What does diversity mean in your organization? Inclusion, equity, bias, belonging, you must be consistent through the organization in terms of what does it mean for you, right? And it has to make sense for your organization using the language and mission and values that are so critical to the brand that you represent. Now, beyond that, in terms of second steps, we have to do some version of assessment. We have to take a snapshot of where we are on our diversity journey. Everybody's gonna be in different places individually. Organizations are gonna be in different places, and that's okay. What's not okay is to not know where you are. Right? So once we've done that assessment, you then go out and do the work, right? Whether it's going to be some versions of coaching, some versions of unconscious bias training, whatever it might be for you, that's what needs to happen in your organization. Then you come back and you reassess, right? There's that old saying that carpenters use, you know, measure twice, cut once,
oh, yeah.
Right? In this case, the measurements are gonna come on either side and then you do the work in between, right? So we have to remember that. Now, I'll add this in the back end, that when we're doing this work, we have to remember that we have to be consistent, mm-hmm. We have to be intentional, and it has to be long-term. Without those three pieces engaged in a meaningful way, then the progress and success that we might have is abbreviated.
Yeah, it's so interesting. You know, one of the things I appreciated about what you wrote in this piece is I think a lot of people were quick to start talking about diversity. They were quick to start talking about how they cared. But it was the difference between those companies who actually started taking action. What does that look like? What are the companies? Can you give us some examples of companies that are taking action? We heard from three incredible women who are taking action in their own companies. What does that look like? How do you take this past just talking the talk?
Sure. And so first, I'd like to give credit where credit is due. If you tried to do something and you stumbled and you made mistakes, okay, right? And if you're not happy with what you did, get better. Right? And like anything else, you would do this if you had you purchased a technology platform or solution, it didn't quite work well. You wouldn't just stop and say, we're going to throw out technology and go back to pen and pencil. You would figure out the right way to move forward. So diversity, the work of diversity works the same way. I tell people sort of comprehensively, we have to elevate the work of diversity to the same level of professionalism as we do every other vertical in our organizations. And when we can do that, when we can say that it is done, then our organizations will have moved in significant ways. Mm. So what does it look like when an organization is making these moves? One, you have leader-led initiatives. It doesn't matter whether you have a chief diversity officer or a VP for diversity, inclusion, and bias. What matters is your leadership leading the charge. Right? And are they doing it in perhaps in an awkward way? They're stumbling around. They're trying to figure it out, but they're doing it in plain view of their team members.
Yeah.
We have talked for 15, 20 years about the vulnerability of leadership. Now it's time where the rubber meets the road. You're really willing to be vulnerable? Let's show and prove now.
Yeah.
Right? Say the awkward thing. Do the best you can and let people know we're all going to go through and try this together.
Sure.
Because that 16 or 60-year-old that's working in your restaurant space, in your food industry space, needs to be able to look to their leadership and know that it's okay to make a mistake.
Yeah.
It's okay to raise your hand and say, I don't know, but we're still going to try. So that has been a consistent piece in organizations that are doing well. They have leader-led initiatives. Second piece I would say is that they are making sure that the next leader's up, right? That group that is just below the C-suite, if you will, is getting deep unconscious bias and bias-related training. Mm. So they can work that out, because they're the next group of leaders.
Right.
And they have to be very well prepared. The third thing I would say is that there's some version of training that is happening for the client-facing, guest-facing components of the organization. It might be less, it might be small, it might be an inoculation as opposed to a fully-fledged coaching experience, but it's something. We can't leave that group out, because oftentimes that can be where a lot of the risk resides.
What's so interesting, I mean, you have experience with the restaurant industry, obviously, in talking to restaurant companies. And here's the thing, I mean, restaurant companies, I mean, we're talking cashier, dishwasher, yep. manager, and then you get up into corporate level. So for me, I feel like this is not just a corporate issue, it's a store level issue. Can you talk about the differences in those two things and how maybe organizations can work to bring change to both sides?
Sure. So I think we back up and say all of these people happen to be humans.
Yep.
This is a human issue.
Yep.
Very few of us walked through the world and came up, grew up, talking about the big buckets of diversity, whether it was age or class and socioeconomics, whether it was religion or disability ability or race or gender or sexuality. We didn't grow up just sitting around, let's have a sandwich, let's have a beer, and talk about LGBTQAI issues. That wasn't what we did. Instead, in many, many ways, especially for those of us that are a little bit longer in the tooth, you were trained to not talk about it.
Mm.
You were trained to respectfully leave it in your car or in the train or elsewhere, and you don't bring that over here. So across the board, whether I be the dishwasher or I'm the support staff person in the restaurant support center, or I am someone else, right? I'm a traveling marketing type person. I need the work. I need the help.
Yeah.
I have to figure out how to have these conversations in a meaningful way. And on the way to being able to do it in a meaningful way, I'm going to do it in an awkward way. And that has to be accepted, supported, and at times given grace and perhaps even forgiven, because I may make a mistake. So organizations have to take a look at it comprehensively, right? And you can't elevate the needs around diversity that the dishwasher might have above or below that of the marketing professional that's traveling around trying to do good work either.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody needs to be touched. Mm-hmm. Everybody needs to be developed. Everybody needs to be cared for, empathized with, and dare I say loved in a way that is significant for them.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. So thinking too, you know, frankly, I think there's a lot of work to be done. I mean, obviously there's a lot of work to be done. But, you know, we've been talking about diversity in leadership in restaurant industry for a long time. And I look at leadership ranks now and I still see a lot of white men, honestly. Where's your optimism level at here? Are we making the changes? Has the work been done? Or what more needs to be done to encourage people and motivate them?
Sure. I think one thing that we have to do is we got to take it maybe a little bit easier on some of the white guys. I mean, just because they happen to be white guys doesn't make them bad people.
Or bad leaders.
Or bad leaders.
Right.
Right. All of us didn't have the education. Right. I regularly out myself on what I did not know as a diversity professional 3 years, 5 years, 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. There's no secret black guy meetings where we have black guy information that we move around and we keep from all the white professional guys. Right. That doesn't work that way. I went to the same kinds of public and private schools that other people went to. I was in the same classes and I learned or didn't learn some of the same things. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to have grace for these men.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. We also have to have expectations of these men. We have to expect them to lead in a very difficult situation, and to expect less of them is insulting. Mm. So we have to raise the bar to extremely high. We have to raise the bar to elite and then ask them, require of them, demand of them that they get over the bar, right? And that they surprise us with their success.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. All right, so last question for you, James. For those who are listening, they're motivated, they're encouraged, they want to make change. What are some resources for them? Outside of the work you're doing, or including the work you're doing, give a plug there, but what are some other resources that can be a support as they're doing this work?
Well, so I'll do some broad things. One, if you have the opportunity to follow somebody on a social media site of some kind or another that you normally wouldn't follow, right? Mm-hmm. So grab two or three of those where the ideas may not be exactly aligned with yours, but include them in your day-to-day thinking so that you can process them. Not because you need to change your mind, but you need to have your ideas and your values pressure tested, right? Do you really believe what you believe? Can you articulate it out loud? Can you now identify how it impacts your leadership, right? Because at the end of the day, that's what it is. Each of us in our own way are leading either our families or ourselves or our teams or our organizations. So I need to be able to say very plainly, this is what I believe, and this is how it impacts my leadership. No matter what side of the fence I come down on any particular topic, and you can pressure test those ideas by beginning to include in your own sort of informal education the ideas and conversations of others. So that's one thing. Mm. The second is to learn to initiate uncomfortable conversations. Right? Go to the person that you care about. I tell people we have this internal circle and we have an external circle. Mm-hmm. I ask people to define I define my internal circle this way. If I go outside and look in my trunk and find a dead body, just out of nowhere, a dead body I didn't put there, a dead body showed up, right? Who am I going to call? The first five or six people I call, that's my internal circle of people.
Okay.
Right? So then I'm going to pressure test my ideas against them, say, this is what I think about this issue that occurred, but I'm going to initiate it. Right? I'm not going to just let it happen. I think that we as leaders need to figure out how to initiate the tough conversations. Now, if you've done it with your internal circle, consider doing it with somebody in your external circle. Mm. Again, initiate the conversation. Speak about what you believe, and then see if that person across from you understood what you said. Mm. Were you able to speak clearly about what you believe and how it informs your leadership? Or did you kind of stumble around and it was awkward? That's fine. Stumble around and be awkward.
Yeah.
And then get better. Right? And so again, it goes back to what I was saying about the leaders. All of us are stumbling around, but we have to demand that we get better. We should demand the most of those people that have raised their hand and said, follow me. Right? But I raise my hand and say, follow me to my family. I raise my hand and say, follow me to my friends. So if I'm going to call myself a leader, by golly, I should act like it.
Yeah. Great words from Dr. James Pogue. An incredible session today. Thank you so much, James. Your contributions are up at nrn.com, the speaker box. Go check it out. Be sure to check those out every month and follow him online and on social media. James, thank you so much.
All righty. We'll see y'all soon. Thank you so much.
Now at Create, we had the Texas Pete Kitchen Hero Cook-Off, and we had a winner. And now, Brett, you actually interviewed Dontrell Hagler, one of the chefs for Denny's. You spoke with him before the winner was crowned. We got to speak with him. You interviewed him. I watched it. He's so interesting. Turns out he was crowned the winner. So lucky us. But he's so interesting. Can you tell us a little bit about the interview?
Yeah, well, also the bison tenderloin that he won with was delicious.
Oh, so delicious.
Ate it at the celebratory creators party. But, you know, I talked with Dontrial about the whole idea of becoming a corporate chef. Like, you don't normally go to culinary school and think, I'm going to develop menu items for Denny's. But once he saw that it was a possibility, he could stay in his home state of South Carolina. He went with it, and he's been there ever since he got out of culinary school.
Well, stay tuned for that. And thank you so much for listening to this week's episode.
You'll enjoy it.
Dontrial
Hagler?
That's correct.
Okay. It is so nice to meet you.
Oh, nice to meet you.
And you work at Denny's.
Correct.
As a chef.
Yes, sir.
What's your job there?
I'm a product development chef at Denny's.
And you just competed in the Texas Pete Cook-Off.
Yes, we did.
What'd you make?
I like to call my dish a bison nighttime hug. So I did two sauces on the bottom. So I did a jerk seasoning sauce with the acorn squash puree on the bottom, a grilled bison, a fresh pickled salad on top, and I garnished it with some dusted potato chips and the acorn seeds.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Do you like toast the seeds?
Yeah, you take them in a pan, you saute them up, and then you dust those in that original Texas Pete.
And it's the same as pumpkin seeds, basically.
Pretty
so you
much.
Just put them on there.
Yeah.
And were you assigned the original Texas Pete? Did they give you a sauce or
I just something? Had the fiery sweet sauce.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, anything else in there, I grabbed. So everything was up for grabs after that.
Do you do these kinds of competitions a lot, or was this the first one?
This is the first one. It's the first one, so we're excited about it.
Was it fun?
It was a lot of fun.
That's cool. And, I you know, I find that... You know, you watch a lot of the TV shows. Well, I don't because I can't stand it. But because, like, my job is to write about food. How am I going to go home and then right. watch a chef competition? But they, you know, when I see it, it's all about, like, oh, we're enemies and right, we're going right, to. Right, and right. chefs aren't like that, no. you know.
No, we're kind of a big family. You know, I just met those guys this morning and it felt like I knew them from years. So it was a good environment in there. Everybody helped out if you needed something. Hey, can I borrow this real quick? You know, everybody. Was there to help each other out.
Right. Yeah, that's part of the fun.
Right, right.
Of being a chef.
Right.
From what I can gather. You right. know, it's all a big team and everyone helps each other. So I've always thought it was weird to watch those competitions and be like, but they're not. That's not how you do it.
No.
Anyway, how long have you been at Denny's?
I'm going on 5 years now.
Whoa.
Yeah. They got me straight out of culinary school.
Oh, where'd you go?
I went to the Arts Institution of Charleston.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. Are you from Charleston?
I'm actually from Orangeburg, South Carolina.
Orangeburg.
That's like 75 minutes away from Charleston.
Like inland or up?
Inland. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. And so is your like heritage like cooking like yummy southern soul food and pimento cheese and like
say,
that?
I would say so. Yeah. Grew up in the church, so all that southern church food. So all that's in my background.
A lot of mac and cheese?
A lot of mac and cheese. Well, macaroni.
Macaroni, but
macaroni, not mac and cheese. Two different things.
Okay, so please tell me about macaroni and how it's different.
All right, macaroni is more like a custard. So you got the eggs, the milk, the cheese, the noodles. So when you bake it, it's like a custard.
Oh.
Mac and cheese is the noodles and the sauce.
Right, that's not as good.
That's not as good.
Mm. Do you do rigatoni also? I was talking to a woman who runs a soul food restaurant in Pittsburgh, and she's okay. like, in Pittsburgh, in the black community, you have to bring rigatoni to everything. Like, that's it. Any right. event, you bring a big tray of rigatoni.
Yeah, I don't know. That's not...
Maybe that's localized maybe to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, depends where you're at. That's not where I'm from.
You do macaroni.
Macaroni, fried chicken, some red beans and rice.
Oh.
And a little bit out of collard greens and cabbage.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I want to eat some. So then your job is just a little bit farther inland in Spartanburg, right? Is that where you guys are headquartered?
We have two offices now. So now we have a global office in Spartanburg. So that's the one everyone knows.
Uh-huh.
And now we just recently opened a new test kitchen in Dallas, Texas.
And so which one, where are you?
I am in Dallas, Texas.
Oh.
Yes.
Well, so it was easier to come here.
Right.
Because it's a short flight.
Right, right.
But you're from South Carolina.
I'm from South Carolina.
Was that a big adjustment moving to Dallas?
Yeah. Yes, it is. It's a large city, so we're trying to get used to it.
And you've been there for
Or you just recently moved there?
I just recently moved there, so I'm 2 months in.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so any of your assessments of Dallas, really, I can't trust, because you don't know yet. You've been there 2 months.
I'm learning just like everybody else.
Yeah, it's part of the fun of being in a new place. So what is your role on the Denny's team?
Okay. So I'm the guy, well, one of the guys that helped with the LTOs.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I dabble in the core menu items. I mostly focus on LTOs and new products testing, short testing, long-term testing. So I'm in there, in the mix, learning different cuisines, learning, understanding our customers, seeing, you know, what their palates are like, where their palates are at this time. Cause, you know, we're working with the millennials now and working to that new generation of people that's coming up into Denny's. So we're trying to be able to still, you know, connect with our original guests, but also connect with the newer guests that's coming inside the Denny's.
Right. And so how are the millennials different? Because, you know, I hear a lot of stories of they want to be more healthy, but then they walk into the restaurant and they're like, no, I really just need a cheeseburger, fries.
I just want a burger.
Yeah, exactly.
A cool burger.
Right.
So you got to play both fields, kind of. So you have a healthy option, but you also, in the back of your mind, know that you need a good burger.
Right.
A good burger and a milkshake.
Right. Well, I've heard that if you have a good option, customers feel better about you, even if they're not going to order it. They're oh, I could totally have a salad.
Correct.
I'm not going to. But next time.
Next time, I'm going to get one.
But next time, they have the cheeseburger anyway. Right. But you still have to have it on the menu.
Still need it, though.
So are there new, better? You have like a Fit Skillet thing going on there, right?
Yeah, Fit Fair.
That's it. And so are you, do you work on new items for that at all?
We're basing a couple of concepts around that. You know, we're trying to develop some bowls. So we're trying to base a couple of bowls around that. We're also developing more skillets based around that as well. So, and also we're trying to bring that and the plant-based involved. So we're trying to, you know, make everyone feel at home when you're at the table. You know, you can have a Fit Fair skillet, a veggie option. You can have a burger and everybody's at the table eating different meals, but all feel like one big meal.
Right. They're all sitting here in Denny's, America's Diner, having delicious food that fits whatever they want. Do you guys have plant-based burgers yet? I don't remember.
We do. We have the Beyond Burger.
Uh-huh.
So that's an option. If you want to build your own burger, you can get a Beyond Burger instead of a beef patty.
If you want.
If you want.
You know, yeah. I personally, if I want vegetables, I'll eat vegetables.
Hey.
But if other people want to eat a burger and that's made out of vegetables, great.
Right.
More power to them. And you guys recently brought back the pumpkin pancake things, right?
Yes.
And a chocolate pancake puppy, I think, if I remember. And that's basically a hush puppy, right?
Yeah, you can say that.
Except you use pancake. Is it the same batter as pancake?
Same batter, yeah.
So you just basically fry it like a hush puppy, but it's a slightly different batter.
Right.
I don't know why I haven't had that yet, because it sounds pretty good.
You got to get them. The double chocolate pancake puppy. So it's got Ghirardelli chocolate in the batter and Ghirardelli chocolate chips.
Is that a new one? I know you guys just released it for this year, but it's brand new?
Yeah.
And then in the summer, you guys, I don't know if you brought them back or if they were new, the Benny's.
They're new too. Yeah. So Benny's are in now. Benny's, it's kind of a hot topic for where we're at. You know, Benny's been around a while, but it's kind of a hot topic for us.
Well, and for our audience who might know, that's slang for Benedict, Eggs Benedict.
Right.
And one of them has, two of them have English muffins, but then one's on like a potato cake, right?
It's like a hash brown potato cake, got a little bit of bacon, a little bit of cheese.
So what do you have to figure out when you're developing items like that chefs might not know? Because you're going to serve it at however many, 1,600 Denny's, something like that?
About 1,700, yep.
Yeah, so you have to figure out how to do it in such a way that it's going to be consistent all the time, right?
So you have to develop that cake, actually. You know, make sure that cakes perform across the nation, also international. So you got to be able to balance how we're going to do this cake. Are we going to hold it thaw? Are we going to hold it frozen? How the meat going to come from the back? How are we going to hold the meat? How that sauce is going to be held? So you got a hollandaise sauce. Are we going to hold it cold and heat it to order? Are we going to hold it hot and just plate it on the meal? Also, you got to think about the egg choice that go on the top of that. So you want, you know, some people might want a soft, easy over egg, a medium egg. Someone might actually want a poached egg on top of their Eggs Benedict. So you got to think of each component one by one so you can get that plate that comes to all the customers.
Right, and make sure that it can be done the same everywhere, correct, even with cooks that have minimal training.
Right, so we make it easy enough for everybody to be able to adapt.
So was that your plan, getting out of culinary school, that you were going to work for a big family dining chain in their offices developing new menu items?
You know, it's funny because, you know, I started working for Denny's as soon as I got out of culinary school. So it was just a big change of, you know, understanding that it's another side to the culinary world besides working actually in a restaurant.
Right.
That you can be a corporate chef and help develop the menu for that restaurant. So it was a big eye-opener for me. So I'm enjoying it. I've been there 5 years, and I'm every year something new, you know. It's exciting. I'm happy to be a part of it.
And it's like a 9-to-5 job, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So that's handy.
Yeah.